I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. So if you're a longtime listener to the podcast, you know that I'm really into evidence, evidence-based medicine, evidence-based lifestyle practices, and proof, and stuff like that. So today's interview is going to be a big departure from that, because I have a conversation today with my friend Mark Lushton, who comes from a very different place. And just to set the scene, my family moved a couple years ago to 6 acres out in the country. And when we moved from our less like a tenth of an acre suburban plot, this seemed like all the land in the world. And we wanted to farm and garden and have retreats and do all sorts of stuff. And it quickly started to feel like we didn't have enough land. Our property is long and narrow, so we weren't sure where to put a greenhouse and where to put in a little shed for washing and storing vegetables and all this stuff. And we started to feel kind of cramped, like maybe we made a mistake, maybe we need to try to buy a field nearby. And it was then that I remembered to call my friend Mark. Because since I've known him for about 15 years now, at every point in my life in which I felt constrained and stuck and frustrated and like I was banging my head against the universe, Mark would help me get out of that. And he wouldn't help me get out of it by giving me the answer, like, you know, where to put the thing or what to do. But he would remind me to think in a whole different way. And he would remind me of what he calls the energetic laws of the universe. And they're not anything that we haven't heard of before, like, you know, all is one and time is eternal and love is the reason for everything. But when I'm stuck in that place of kind of constipated thinking, where everything about me is just feeling really tight-assed and not in flow, Mark helps to remind me of truth that he experiences on a daily basis and that I experience when I allow myself to experience it. So Mark came down and gave us a feng shui consultation on our land, which again, I thought was gonna be like, okay, where do we put this thing? How do we move the fence? And we got to all that, but we got to it in terms of applying these big picture energetic laws of beauty and love and eternity. And once we were thinking in the right way and feeling with a kind of a flow, then the answers just started popping up. And it expanded beyond where we were gonna put things on the land, but also a little bit about how I was structuring my business and where I was gonna have my office and how I was gonna help people and really getting in touch with the joy and happiness that I feel for certain things and the sense of duty and obligation and stuckness that I feel for others. And so this stuff is reverberating throughout my life, and you'll probably see it reverberating throughout the podcast and throughout the work that I do, the products and services that I provide. And so I wanted to get Mark on the podcast to kind of share his view and to share his energy with you all. So without further ado, Mark Lushton, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you, Howard.
So I'm really excited about this conversation. You know, we've talked many times over the years, and we did a TV show together. Was it last week?
Yes, I think it was last week.
And I've also been letting people know, I hope it's okay that you helped me and my family and my homestead with a feng shui consultation while you were down here in North Carolina.
That was fun. That's a great place you have there. And we really found some new things about it, didn't we?
Yep. And, there are so many levels in which we could talk about this, but we had come to this conversation with an intention of something that I personally find really hard, and I know a lot of my clients and students find it hard, and the world finds it hard, which is simply to take care of ourselves. And you had a lot of powerful things to say about why it's important and about how to do it and about how our society twists that in ways that kind of, take a little bit of the life out of it. So I'd love for you just to begin by just describing what you mean by like taking care of ourselves or, putting ourselves first, or how you think about that whole concept.
Okay. Well, before I, just go into that, I think it's important to lay a groundwork or a pathway into that, because it's been so drilled into us that that's not what it's about. It's, it's taking one for the team or not putting yourself before others. And so I'd like to back up a little before taking that head on, because what I really maintain about that whole idea is it comes from nature. It's a basic truth that we need to really take care of ourselves. And so to just try to convince that without any groundwork would be really difficult for me. So okay. Can you help me with that?
Sure. So what is the groundwork that, it's almost like you're saying we need to, before we can like go up, we have to dig ourselves out of a hole that we're already in.
Yes, that's it. So
what's the hole?
The hole is this whole idea that the way we look at things of separation, that we are all these individual units living in this big, vast world of parts that all kind of fit together. But, it's up to us to sort of move around in that and be our own agents. But it's all based on this idea of separateness that, we get from old science and just from everywhere. That's the way we live. So first of all, that's not true. And so when we start to see ourselves differently, when we say take care of ourselves, it's not about going to the gym, eating well, keeping ourselves clean, taking time out of the day to cut our toenails or whatever it is. that's not what I mean by taking care of ourselves. It's really when you think of ourselves, what that really is, we're taking care of everything by having our attention in the right place and that's closer to our idea of self, because our access point to everything is our own central nervous system, is how I look at it.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of a way in for people that's kind of a slope, and also a way for me. So you're really talking about kind of a spiritual or metaphysical truth that everything we see out there that we think of as separate, as not part of us, as it may be in opposition to us or sometimes allied with us, that that's all illusion, that there's just sort of one flow of energy, and we have access, we have access to that one flow of energy through our senses.
That's right. So I'm going to, again, steer us here, because we've gone, you know, into a very high discussion at this point. And so if I bring it back to say, okay, well, if you're taking care of your spouse, you know, your spouse is sick with a cold, and in my case, she would be in bed, and I'm bringing, you know, some ginger ale or something up to her. Now, is that taking care of her? That it's also, it's taking care of myself too. I'm just taking care at that point, because, you know, you can see that we're not just strictly these bodies of flesh that move around in the world. We're more than that. So, you know, it's easy to see, well, with your spouse, it's really you're one person, not two. Or your family, you know, you're a unit. And so it's a little easier to see that while you're taking care of your spouse or your children, you're taking care of your responsibility, yourself, in an extended way. And then you can keep going from there. You know, you're taking care of your community, you're taking care of your planet, but it's all really you. And when you can do that effectively, if you can be really focused in that caring so that you're not wasting your energy on what would be not being caring towards something, then that's all you're doing, is you're taking care of yourself, and therefore yourself is everything. So, you know.
Okay. So what would wasting energy look like? And I think, you know, I think for myself, you know, I have this idea that I need to be very generous to other people. Like, I, you know, that if I just like went out and made money, that wouldn't make me a good person. Like, I, you know, so I offer courses either, you know, that people can pay what they want, or it's free, or, you know, I give refunds easily. And sometimes I feel like I'm in a struggle between like doing nice things for everybody else and really not taking care of my own finances. So is that an example of kind of, you know, wasting energy? Cause it's sometimes it feels like, yeah, it's clear when I bring my spouse something and she's sick in bed that that's serving me. But there's other times where it feels like it's zero sum. It's either me or someone else.
Right. So that's where we get into kind of the illusion of the separateness of everything. By taking care of something else, you're depriving yourself of something. And it's always important to have perspective and to see that actually there's nothing wasted. It's all learning. There's no wasted energy. It's just when you deplete yourself, you'd get sick, and then you'd have to go to bed for a couple of days and recuperate and hopefully learn from that. So it's not really a waste. We're all learning here how to do these things better. But I think where we can really improve and get clear is in that issue of looking at things as all one thing or as separate, all separate things, and to get very clear about what is true so that we can align our thoughts with the truth and our beliefs, ultimately our beliefs with the truth. And then you're really becoming powerful and effective and happy and all good things, healthy, and comes from that place of true beliefs, because then your thoughts are powerful, and you can create from that place.
So how am I limiting myself if I've got this idea, which I do, that there's a conflict between me making money and me serving people? You know, I'm like, well, I want everyone to eat a healthy diet. The planet will be better. People will be happier. There'll be less misery. But then people come and they say, well, I can't afford your program. And then my impulse is, well, here, have it for free. And then I spend nights worrying about paying my bills. So what am I missing?
I think that's a tough one to take head on. That's a tough one, Howard. I'm not sure if I can just.
All right, let's hold that in debate.
Money is a very tough subject. It holds so much for us, and so it's really about getting into this place of flow and abundance. And money does come from what I was just talking about, where everything is. So let's not take money on as the entrance point on this.
Okay.
We'll come back to that. Okay.
Let me give you a different one then. So a lot of the people I work with are women who are mothers and have jobs. And it's a trope in our society that, you know, women don't take time for self-care. They're taking care of everybody else.
Yes.
And the way our society tries to convince women to take care of themselves is this metaphor of the oxygen mask. Drop, you know, if you're on a plane and the oxygen masks drop, put yours on before you help anyone else.
Yes.
And you mentioned to me that there's
something basically faulty there. And that's right. It's still based on the premise that it's different to take care of others than it is yourself. And it's also based on the false premise that the value of us as people is our ability to be able to contribute to the whole, to contribute to other people, not to ourselves. So it's like, well, you know, you put the oxygen mask on yourself first, because then you're available to help others, and that's what counts. And that's really, it's not true. That's not where your value is. And that's not who you are. You know, so it's really fraught with all sorts of beliefs, and to dismantle them one by one is kind of what I've had to do over. I've been a rebel my whole life, since I was a kid, very young, and I just kind of came in that way. And so it's taken me my whole life to grapple with all these beliefs that our culture has that just are a little off, that are just not fundamentally true. And so, you know, we would have to really take each one of them, but those... if we're going to get to everything, but we can, you know, start with some of the big truths that you and I have talked about, you know, that love is the reason for everything and all is one. And these are lofty, but I think we've got to get there somewhere so that we can live. I mean, we can do all the things from those true beliefs. It's about saving the planet. It's about all these big issues too, global change. Everybody knows that we're not going to fix those problems by continuing on this course of our present, what we consider our present beliefs of science, like science is going to save us. No, I mean, we're kind of desperately trying to believe that, but that's not going to happen. Science isn't going to save the planet. You know, it's about a shift in consciousness, and I think a lot of people are starting to see that. And it's a tough period here because it's hard to use our old way of thinking and imagine what that's going to look like. You know, what is that going to look like if everybody starts to become more aligned with the truth and finding their power? How does that translate to what we're seeing things now as? You know, what happens to the systems that are in place and the way we do things, the business? You know, how does that all change? And I think we have a lot of fear about that. If you look at the movies that have been popular, all the cataclysmic Earth changes, and we have a lot of anxiety about what that's going to look, and a lot of doubt too. And then others are kind of in denial, like, yeah, we can fix this, but it's not going to get better if we're starting off with false beliefs. And that's kind of what I maintain.
Right. So one thing you wrote to me in an email is that we have to see the importance of loving ourselves not as a means to an end.
Right.
So
when you think of, first of all, if you can make that shift to thinking that yourself is actually everything, and by taking care of yourself, you're doing all that you can to take care of everything else, that's a big step. And, you know, we're taught to feel guilty if we put ourselves first. So the only way we can put ourselves first and actually take care of ourselves by feeling good about that, because that's an important part of taking care of yourself, is to not be beating yourself up, feeling guilty for things. Then we can begin to see, well, I'm feeling better, I'm healthier, and that must be good, and there's something about that. There's something good about that. And then intuitively, when you're feeling good, it just becomes a very important thing that affects everything else. I mean, imagine if everybody on the earth were happy for a day, which we all chose the same day, and everybody was happy. What would that be like? That would be just unbelievable. That everything would shift and never be the same after that. And so,
yeah, it reminds me of, like, you know, one of these fancy resorts where, you know, rich people go and the staff is just trained to be happy all the time, or to appear happy. So, like, the whole world would be this paradise resort.
Yeah. Well, I think we suspect that if people are happy, let's say, especially the rich people, then they're doing something wrong for the rest of the world, you know. And so we even walk around suspicious of anybody with a smile on their face these days, like, oh, they must be, you know, rich and depriving other people of money, and they're polluting, they're consuming. You know, that's what happiness represents. But that's not happiness. I mean, that's you can't judge other people's happiness. I mean, there's so much wrong with that. I don't know what to say. But that's kind of what we think. Like, well, they're not doing their part. You know, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, the bumper sticker. I mean, I can see where that's coming from, but that's wrong on so many levels.
Well, let's explore that a little bit. So let's follow that energy. What is wrong with that? Because you know, across my Facebook feed, so you came over, we had all these conversations, I was in a very sort of peaceful, loving place, and then in my Facebook feed, I see stories about this pipeline protest and sicking the dogs on the protesters, and I see more young black men getting killed by police. And it's like, I'm outraged. Tell me about what, you know, some of the things. Let's dig into, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. Because it's not entirely wrong, is it?
Well,
or is it?
It's not entirely wrong in that it does show that you've got compassion if you're feeling upset when you see these things. I mean, your nervous system or your ability to feel compassion is there. And I think we're so worried that that's not true for some people, that we kind of teach compassion like it's this thing that we have to learn. And it is so basically human to have compassion. I mean, look at the number of facial expressions, the number of nerve endings we have in our face compared to anywhere else in our body. I forget the number, but it's just so many facial expressions and nuance of that have gone into our evolution that it shows how important our face is for showing emotion, and then we can pick up on that in a very quick second. And so why has that developed? It's because we're compassionate beings, and that was very important for our survival, the cooperation. And we've gotten so far from that. In fact, it's not cool, you know, in some ways for these younger generations to show expression, to show any facial expression. They have to walk around with, you know, very still, because it's vulnerable to have emotion. So we're really shutting down some of our innate tendencies or abilities. And
so is it like you know, if I'm doing audio and I can turn down all the frequencies and then I just turn up the one outrage frequency so that I can prove that I care?
Yeah, there's that part of it, but what is effective about having rage? What lasting change can you bring about with rage? And it's, you know, the activists, I mean, there's probably a purpose to bringing awareness to some issues. You know, I'm not going to start criticizing people for doing what they're doing. And it's all part of it. So, but it's just fundamentally that we're turning on each other as the source of the problem. Like, we're blaming all these humans on the earth for ruining it for everybody. And we're just turning our anger, instead of to an effective place for change, which would be ourselves, we're blaming. And it gets so far from where we're effective and where we're powerful, it's just making things worse to be outraged. It's putting the responsibility on something outside yourself, which isn't at all where it belongs. It all belongs on yourself. It's the only thing that you have power with is your own thoughts and your own beliefs, your own actions. That's where your creative power lies, not in, you know, changing big things out there that makes you miserable trying to, because it's so frustrating, because you're unable to. It's just you're living a life of anger, and that's not good for anybody. That's not taking care of yourself, nor is it really helping anything.
So coming from a place of anger, that has to be predicated on a separation.
That's it. That's what it all goes back to, is that separation of they versus me, the good guys and the bad guys, you know, and you get together with the good guys and you talk about it, how bad the other people are and how they're screwing it up. And that's just a false notion from the start. We're, you know, so you're not going to get anywhere that way. And that's why we're not going to solve these problems in this same consciousness that created all of them, this idea of separation. And it's really coming around. I'm very hopeful to see these ideas of oneness that have come about. I trace it back to sort of the East-West collision or meeting back in the early 1900s, mostly with some of the thought that came over in the yoga and the spirituality from the East. That's the basic starting point, is we're all one, you know. And it's become cliche, so people aren't really hearing it or understanding it. And the West is so dominant with the results of their separation, that seems to be where the power is. But that's the power based on separation thinking is violence. It's coercion of physical threat and fear. That's not going to go anywhere. That's going to, you know, destroy everything. We're not going to get to a unity by taking everything apart and analyzing it and saying, well, how does this fit? And let's put this here. And, you know, that's so small. That's based on the intelligence of human beings versus the intelligence of the universe. Now, we can access that intelligence, but that's not what we're doing when we're starting from a point of untruth, which would be the separation.
Mm. Now, so let me bring that back to my own ministry in health. That a lot of people, when they start a change program, they're fed up with themselves. They're fed up with their lives. They're fed up. They're angry at doctors. They're angry at the food industry. They're angry at themselves, especially for not being able to say no to bad food and say yes to exercise. And they have all these judgments. And it feels like there's a lot of internal violence and coercion and self-loathing.
Yeah.
That's the place where a lot of people start their journey.
Right. Well, that's very good, Howard, to get to that place, because we are taught from very early age what's what. And if we don't agree, we're threatened with the coercion of physical imprisonment, physical violence. You have to see things this way or you can't be with the human community. So we all go along with that. And so we turn it on ourselves, that voice of authority, that we are separate. You know, God is outside judging us, and with this conditional love that's supposed to be big, but how big could conditional love be? That's not love. That's not love at all. If we don't do the right things, we'll go to hell. Now, what an idea that is for love. That's coercion. That's, you have to believe this and do this. And so when we're left thinking that everything's separate, we're turning all that judgment against ourselves. And if we're not doing the right thing and not getting the results, we're blaming ourselves. So I think the first step is embracing the true love, which is about forgiveness or about non-judgment of ourselves, and just saying, you know, just starting to see that everything is as it should be. It's a real blessing when you can give yourself that thought that everything is just where it's supposed to be, and everybody's doing their best, including you. You're doing your best every day. And then that voice says, no, you're not. You could be doing better. That's not true, because if you could be doing better, you would be. Well, I slip, and I, like, get rid of that voice. It's just so wrong. It's coming from such a wrong place. It's because behind everything is this immense, vast love that's not conditional. And when we can sort of get to a place of quiet and perceive the truth of that love that's holding us, that's embracing us, supporting us with everything, you know, that we are, and that it's very important to love ourselves and to not be so critical of ourselves and everything else, because we turn that on every, you know, if we have that in ourselves, we turn that everywhere else, because we don't really want to take blame, because we don't believe it. It's, you know, we at the core believe that we're doing our best, and that means somebody else is not doing, because look how bad things are, and look how it's not working out for me. So we're looking to blame. You have to not blame anybody. You have to see that it's all perfect, and it's love is the only thing going on here. It's the only principle at work. We're just cutting ourselves off from that. And that's the and the best way to cut yourself off from the love and the flow of love in your life is to not love yourself.
Okay. So if I'm 200 pounds overweight, I'm on 9 different meds, I haven't gone out on a date in 15 years, I'm afraid of going to movies, theaters, restaurants, I can't fly on airplanes. How do I get to a place of everything as it should be?
I think it's that love. I mean, if you can get to that place of feeling that love from the outside, and that's what grace is. And if you just be receptive and you just start getting sensitive and give yourself a break and stop that self-loathing, you'll feel that love because it's there. It's just everywhere. The universe is filled with it. It's all there is. It's all loving energy. And all we have to do is allow that in. Now, it sounds easier if I'm just talking about it, but that's a starting point. And when you practice that receptivity, then you get good at it. It's you let it come in more and more, and you quiet the voices that are just like demons haunting you of judgment and self-loathing. So as far as a starting point, this is the great news. The starting point is every single moment, every single second, every present. The present is filled with this love that I'm talking about. And we just have to open to it and to relax into it and to, you know, we're just running around like scared little children who don't really, who feel like they've been abandoned. And we haven't been abandoned. Maybe we've abandoned ourselves in our own thoughts, in our own beliefs, but we haven't been abandoned. And we can feel that, you know, at any point, if we can just quiet all that noise and that emotion and tap into that. And once we can, we're, you know, it's like we can get healthy. It's not going to happen with our bodies instantly. Of course, that's not how matter works. Matter needs some time, you know, time and matter. But the thought can be instantaneous, and the effect of the thought is faster than the speed of light. So that's the good news, that you can start changing your thoughts, which is the only thing you can control anyway. I mean, you know, you can manipulate physical reality a bit, or you can pretend that you're manipulating more than that, like with people or whatever. But really, our power is all in our thoughts and then how they become our beliefs. And if you love yourself for, if you allow yourself to be loved, and then you do that same thought and then express that with action too.
So
that's what healing is.
Yeah. So I mean, when, as I'm listening to you with an ear from someone who has been, you know, subject to these self-loathing thoughts for a long time. And I think what I hear you saying is that the substrate of our being is not those thoughts. That even though they're so habitual, we think that they are, we have to stop them. We have to take action to make them stop. The truth is that we're actively putting all our energy into generating them. That they're not the default, but we get confused, and because they happen so quickly and so habitually,
we think that's what who we are, and right, that's not who we are, and that's why meditation is so wonderful a gift from those Eastern cultures, and I guess some Western sources as well. With meditation, but to get to that quiet place, you realize, oh, those thoughts are not who I am. You know, I'm the silent one in the center of all this, kind of observing and lovingly observing, and just loving the energy of who we really are beneath. What you call all this substrate is just this loving presence that connects us with that earlier idea I was talking about, with the unity. That's where we can feel our access and our connection to everything. That's who we are. That, and when I say take care of yourself, take care of that. Nourish that part of yourself, which is who you really are, and the rest will respond, because you'll start seeing those loathing thoughts, and you'll be like, oh, get out of here, you know, leave me alone. Where did this come from? And then you figure out, well, this happened when you were young, and you were trying to protect yourself, so you develop these personalities and this and that. I don't think you really have to go through all of psychotherapy, but that works. It just takes a while. But I think you can just a little more invite that into your life through getting to that quiet, loving place and forgiving yourself and seeing that this is my journey. And look, you know, if I can find happiness after all this time, that's a major achievement. And look how strong that happiness will be because of all the heavy lifting that I had to do to get there. Nobody's going to shake me from that. And you see that all the time with people that have had to struggle to get somewhere. They're really strong there, and they're just solid in their confidence, their happiness, their well-being.
Huh. It's almost like a spiritual IKEA effect, or the IKEA effect in social psychology is when people have to put labor into something, they value it more. You know, when you build your cabinet from IKEA, yeah. that people want more money to sell it to get rid of it than if they just bought an yeah. identical cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, because you're feeling empowered as you're creating this this self that's able to maintain that energy coming through of that love. I mean, you don't lose that. Once you build that, you're not going to lose that. I mean, you'll slip out of it, and those other voices will, when you're hungry and famished and in a bad mood, those voices will come back. But as we take care of our bodies and our thoughts, it all starts to gain momentum, and it gets easier, and it builds momentum.
Yeah. Now,
then things outside of us reflect back to us. In fact, they reflect immediately back. So if you can do this for a few minutes in a day, that's when the songbird will show up and start singing a little song. And that's where the magic happens, when you find your connection to your source and you live there for a minute. And that's magical. And that's the reality. That's the truth of it.
Now, there's something really, I want to say, subtle or tricky about that, because in a sense, we're saying that loving ourselves, being part of this universal truth of energy flow, of unconditional love, is an end unto itself. And at the same time, it's going to bring about all the things we want, right? It also looks like the means to the end, but only if it's the end, right? So if I truly love myself, then I will take care of others in the way that they should be taken care of, without resentment, bitterness, strings attached, burnout.
You got it, Howie. But
I kind of like, okay, I'm going to sit for a minute, and like one eye is going to keep flickering open, looking for that goddamn songbird that Mark promised me. Right.
Well, the proof or the confirmation, but that's going back to the separation theory of proof. You don't need any proof when you're in that place. It's just an experience, and you can't prove it, because that's bringing it out into a different system of logic and time, space, these structural parameters that we've put on it with our logical, scientific mind. It's like, well, how do you prove any of this? That's the wrong way to prove it. What's more proof than experiencing something? I got a feeling. Do you need proof that feeling happened from some outside monitoring source? I don't think we've gotten that far. I mean, some people maybe. They might have to hook themselves up to a machine to believe that they're alive or that they're feeling something, But most of us, that's good enough. If we feel something, it's true, and nobody's going to convince us otherwise. So the doubt is the part of that you have to let relax. And the difficulty there is that it feels very vulnerable to relax that doubt, because we've been taught that we'd be made a fool of if we believed some of that silly stuff that can't be proved.
Mm. Or in my own case, I feel like if I truly were living according to my own joy, just doing the things I want to do, there's a fear in me that I would become a selfish asshole, or that I would just sit at home and eat chocolate all day, and I would never exercise or do hard things or challenge myself. That there's almost a sense like this external authority that I either fear externally, or I've interjected into myself, and this authority voice that tells me to get up at 5:30 and work out, that without that, I would not be living according to my values.
Yes. Well, I think that's not going to go away completely. I think that's part of being human. It's keeping us honest. It's like our fear response that we've developed, and there are probably good reasons for it in some applications. But when it sort of gets in and takes hold, that kind of fear, and you give it energy, and it fits with your other beliefs, it's just going to remain longer, you know. And it's like you're almost saying, okay, you can stay there. You're probably good for me somewhere, so I'll just let you in my living space, you know. If you just quietly just see that and not recoil so much, say, oh, that's just part of me, and you love that part of yourself, it's not going to be as noisy. It's going to get the attention, you know, like the child, and then it'll quiet down. You don't have to give it energy by engaging with it with hatred, or saying like you're getting in my way, because there really is nothing that's wanting to get in your way of feeling good and being happy. It's you're putting stuff there, but that is all what needs to be healed. And you just work at that. Does that answer your question? I don't want to just like sweep something under the rug. We can talk about that more.
I mean, there's a certain relief in saying, well, this is a part of me, and it's an impulse that doesn't deserve to be exterminated.
Right. Yeah, it's not something. Nothing can be exterminated. It can be sort of broken up and sent away and put in to somewhere, or just let go, so you're not giving your attention to it, you know. But it'll find its way. It's like dust, you know, just go somewhere once you've burned it or whatever. But, you know, you can see these things as patterns. And once you identify something like that, it's like a weed. You know this is a weed, and you're just going to pull it every time and then go back to that still point of... So the fear really is that you're going to lose all the good stuff that you've gained if you let some of these things go. It's like hard work and fear sometimes go together, and we another societal imperative is to work hard, and that's how you'll get ahead. And that is so not true. That's not how people get ahead, is hard work, even though the ones who do get ahead say that. They say, oh, it was hard work, as if, you know, all you have to do is work hard. That's not what it's about at all. You can, you know, there's people that work really hard and don't get ahead. Do you think they want to hear that they're not working hard enough, and that these billionaires did work hard enough? You know, that's not what it's about. So we kind of equate that adrenaline that we get from fear to driving us forward and making something, making ourselves better and achieving and getting the things that we set out to do. But that's very weak energy compared to when you tap into the energy of the universe with love. That's the real power in the world. And when you get to that energy, you hardly have to do anything. You're just being all the time, and it's all easy and flowing, and you're just regulating that, you know, how much you want to.
So, but when you're being, that could very easily look to the outside as really hard work.
Yes, that's the key. But when you're just having lots of fun, like a kid playing in the sandbox and just lost in the reverie of the dump trucks dumping the sand and working with other kids, and you can say he's working hard, but I don't really think of that as hard work. I think that is more playing and just being in bliss and just being. And so,
well, I guess it's about, you know, kind of a definition of work. Like, what even does that mean? You know, like there's a physics definition of like moving mass, but yeah. You know, like the most mass I've ever moved has been like, you know, hiking up mountains. Like, that's not work. That's leisure. I pay money to go do that.
Yeah.
And you know, certain pieces of writing that I've done have just flowed out of me, like I wasn't, you know, like 2 hours passed in a minute.
Right.
But there are, you know, so like what does it even mean to do work? It, you know, I think in our culture it means something I'd rather not do.
Yeah.
So they have to pay me to do it.
Right. Right. That gets all twisted up in our obligations and our responsibility to take care of others first and do the greater good and be part of the gross national product and all these shoulds that come down that were imposed to us long ago as, you know, from the authorities as the worker bees. And then we try to enslave other people to do that which we don't want to do, and we're all out of the flow at that point, you know. It's, and I mean, sometimes when you're, let's say you're starting your own business and you're really passionate about what you're doing and you believe in it and you love it. Well, sometimes that's going to get challenging and feel difficult at 2 a.m. when you're still up. You want to be sleeping. So it's not like that's always the bad thing, because you have energy to sustain you that may not always be like extremely comfortable. But you have to always know what you're feeling. And that's the kind of the starting point, you know what you're feeling, know what you're thinking. That's where our power is. And when you're feeling bad, that's an indication that there's something wrong. And you have to trust that. Yeah, and you have to go see, well, why am I feeling bad? What are the thoughts that I'm thinking that are not true? Because that's when you feel bad, is like, oh, I've got to do this, or... And then you trace that back to, they're going to put me in jail, or they're not going to like me, they're going to withhold love, I'm going to go to hell. All these fear-driven thoughts.
So I think there's an important distinction that we have to make. Maybe there's different kinds of feeling bad, and we need different words for it. So the one feeling bad is, you know, I've stopped eating crap, and now I miss it. And I feel bad because I'm not going to have an ice cream sandwich, or I'm feeling bad because I started a business and part of it is I have to do all this administrative stuff that I don't enjoy and I can't wait until I get successful enough to outsource.
Yeah. So let's choose one of those examples and trace the thoughts that would be going into that bad feeling.
Should we start with the ice cream sandwich?
Yes.
Okay, so I feel bad, and feeling should be my guide, and so I really want to eat this thing because it gives me this momentary pleasure while I'm eating it.
Yeah, and maybe you're afraid that your pleasure in general in life will be diminished if you don't have this sandwich or can't have it ever. You say, well, there goes 10% of the joy in the rest of my life. I'll never have that sensation, that pleasure of an ice cream sandwich again if I don't eat them. I'm losing. And, you know, that's an unarticulated thought most of the time. It's just sort of, in there. But that's the belief that's kind of holding on to it. There's this lack of, there's a certain amount of pleasure that's in the world. And, you know, for me, much of it comes from food. And I really like those ice cream sandwiches. And so I'm going to be 10% less happy without these. And so I'm going to really eat this one and enjoy this one because it's, you know, the last one. And but that's not true, but we're thinking that. And so when you can sort of identify, and when you feel that feeling of sadness or loss, and you see, you can trace it to that thought, or whatever thought it is, you can just challenge that thought and come up with a thought that is true, which is, oh, well, if I get rid of this, there's so much more pleasure that's going to open up to me. And I can't wait to discover what that is. And that's the, you know, that's the hopeful thought. And that's that hope. I wish I could just convince people just by my words, but I don't think that's realistic, that there is more for us as in this world. I mean, when I say love, you know, vast, immense love, there's nothing better than that. You know, everything comes from, you know, pleasure and everything comes from that. And like, it's always, it's available to us. We have to put down our fears that there isn't enough, because there's absolutely enough of everything for everybody. This world is incredibly rich and full, and yet we've, you know, another very untrue thing is we don't, hardly anybody believes that. So we're just grabbing what we can to fill that void, that false belief that it's going to run out and it's not going to be enough if we don't grab it now and if we don't compete with everybody else. And and my dreams of what I most want will be denied me if I don't do this and that. And there's all this fear around it. And I wish I could just assuage people's fears that way. There is enough. There is enough time, because time is eternal. Life is eternal. That's another thing that we haven't touched on yet. And when you start getting into alignment with these truths, you can relax and take control again, rather than having these false thoughts that everybody supports, our whole culture supports these false thoughts. So we're all trapped in this false way of thinking unless we can really start getting clarity by taking our own authority and believing what feels right to us instead of some outside authority telling us how it is. Because we have access to all of it through our connection inside.
Mm. So what I hear you saying, and I'll just translate that into the second example about someone starting their own business and having to spend hours doing stuff they're not suited for or they don't enjoy in the service of the vision for this business, that you're going to say the same thing, that I trust that this sacrifice now is going to lead to great love, great accomplishment, great expression. So that, so again, I'm trusting, it's like this really benevolent slot machine, right? I have to put a coin in. Things aren't going to come if I just sort of sit around and do nothing and expect the universe to take care of me. But when I employ my will in conjunction with what the universe has given me, then this coin I'm spending now is going to come back with friends. Is that close to it? Or is there too much effort in that, even in the way I've expressed it?
I mean, right. Even the sacrifice scares me a little bit. It's like it can become that sacrifice doesn't have to be seen that way, because that's a little unnecessary if there's not a zero sum game, or if there's just plenty for everybody. When you're not thinking of sacrifice, you're thinking of as like I have this energy and I want to give it, and this is gonna do it, or this is not fun, I'm not gonna do it, and knowing that that's okay, because your path is always the joyful path. And it's hard for us to really hear that, because we've been taught the opposite, that it's all built on hard work and sacrifice, and that's how you get good things. But that's not at all true. And I don't want to start saying that. Maybe it was not a good example when I was saying in the middle of the night. There's still joy in that. It's still hope and trust and belief in your ability to bring about something.
Yeah, but I mean, it's been a while since I've had to build a business from that level, although I'm still, I'm still at a place where I'm doing things that at some point I would like other people to do. But let's say I get up in the morning and I want to run. So a lot of the people I work with, we're working on exercising, and we talk about it in terms of like authentic human beings move and exert. And in our natural ancestral environment, that was a prerequisite of being alive, is, moving around, foraging, gathering, hunting, defending. And we don't have to do it in this society. And so for me to get up in the morning and run, part of me wants, I'd rather sleep in. So how does this understanding of like, all is love, and that I can, that my feelings, my positive feelings are my guide. What am I missing when I get up in the morning and I go, shit, I have to run 6 miles today?
Yeah, I have the same thing. It's waking up is tough for me, getting up and greeting the day and getting all positive about it, because I'm pretty grumpy in the morning. But to actually go out and run like you do, that's a whole new level. It must serve you somehow to do that. And that's probably what you focus on now, right? I mean, it feels really good when you get to that 6 mile point or whatever it is that in the middle of your run. I know you run far. And you feel really good for the rest of the day, and it's what you need to be at your best. You want to give the world your best, so you're digging deep and you're a very passionate person. And so this is serving you, and getting over that, you're getting over that initial laziness or whatever, you're proving to yourself that you are the master of your body. So we're all different. It sounds like it's serving you well. But if you can trace the demons, maybe I think what you're asking is, if it weren't fear that was motivating me here, then I wouldn't do it, and then I wouldn't be at my best. And so fear is a good motivation. And that's where I would challenge you to ease back from that. And because maybe that isn't your best self, and in fact, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be the place that you'd want to be motivated from very much. You'd get burnt out that way. So you might want to trace that back to, well, what am I doubting about myself that that I've inherited from strict parents or something, that if I don't take charge of my will, then I won't get what I want in life, and I won't be valuable to other people. You know, you can challenge that and get to a place where you're just motivated because you're just happy doing everything and you're following that flow. And it's a reprogramming. It takes a while. It can take a while to shift from fear being your motivator to happiness and joy being your motivator. And because the whole story of our culture, again, is those who, you know, follow their happiness as their guide, not their responsibility or their duty to society and to others. They're just kind of these lazy bums that end up homeless and drugged out, and that's the story that we tell ourselves.
Mm. Right. So,
and yet, that's where our power is, though, is in, it's not fighting against this universe. It's going with the energy of the universe, and that's what we have to find in this whole shift of consciousness. That because this that other world is not working.
Right. So if we can bring it back full circle to the folks I work with, and especially to the women and the mothers who are, who feel trapped in their schedules, that they don't have time to eat well, to cook for themselves, to take an hour to meditate, to think. That they're taking care of maybe the physical aspects of other people's needs, but not the emotional ones, not the deeper ones. Like, having the trust is, you know, that if I could be truly joyful as I move about my day, that everyone around me would be so much better off, even though that's not why I'm doing it.
Right. Right. That's the difference. It's like we have to trust the power that we tap into. We have to know that it's there and that it's not all on our shoulders to make all this happen, because that's small power compared to when we tap into the unlimited power of love. And so that joy that you're talking about, that's the real gift to everybody else, that taking care of everybody else. Just if you were just happy, that would be so good for everyone around you and everything. It would, you know, your whole life would reshape around that joy, because that vibration that you're sending out. And you'd let go of these little things that interrupt that joy, because a lot of times we feel like we're under the gun, and that's not just a slip of the tongue. That's what it comes down to. That kind of coercion is enforced all the way with guns in our society. You know, it's the police, the military. You know, if we step out of line and we keep stepping out of line, it's going to be the gun eventually we're going to face.
Uh-huh.
So getting back to that place of not being afraid and frantic and anxious about all those consequences that we've been told will happen if we if we slip up, if we relax. And when you find that place of joy and happiness and doing things from that place, you get so much support when you're there to do everything you need to do and to have all your dreams come true, and everybody around you will respond to that.
And your dogs are agreeing.
Somebody just came to the front door. I'm going to let them go away. Okay, I'll go back here. I hope my reception's still...
Yeah, it's fine. No, I...
Okay.
Give your dogs hugs from me.
Yeah. So that's where there's just such a safety net, and yet we don't believe that, and we don't relax into that enough. And they're just like, that's all anybody wants who loves you anyway, is for you to be happy. And, you know, it doesn't seem like that from the employer, but you have some unraveling to do if you've gotten that far where, you know, you're afraid of your employer, you're afraid of everything around you, and you're just always so anxious because you're afraid all the time that it's all going to fall apart if you don't maintain it with this sacrifice.
Right. And I love that the dogs just chimed in, because it just reminded me that, you know, we live in this human created world, and we think that we are the measure of all things. But when you look at every other living thing, they all know this law.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That your dogs don't like do things out of duty. Right? Unless you whip them and beaten them. You know, if they've just been allowed to flower as their natural selves. Or I'm looking out the window at the chestnut tree and the grass in my neighbor's field and the pines in my front yard and all the potted plants that Mia bought to put in the new front area following your feng shui consultation, that every part of creation just follows its bliss, except for us.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
and we see ourselves, that's why we see ourselves as separate from it all. You know, like, oh, we're different. You know, we have these beliefs that say, oh, we're the masters of this. We have to take care of it and do all this stuff. And so now we're blaming everybody else for not doing that. And therefore, there's global warming and climate change and poverty and all these things we're blaming each other for. And ultimately, the responsibility is only for your own connection to that. But it's also being responsible to it all, which it's a... I mean, I don't know if I want to go on that tangent if we're trying to wrap up here.
Can I invite you back?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
That'd be fun to talk about, like how we can be responsible for things that we can't control.
Okay, because my podcast, like life, is eternal, so there's always another.
Oh,
there's always another call.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'll bookmark that, because that's definitely, you know, as growing up in an activist family, where, you know, being on the picket line and protesting and fighting was what I saw growing up. So I would love to explore, you know, where those roots have taken hold and are keeping me paradoxically from being the change I wish to see in the world.
Yes, we're just getting warmed up here, it seems like, because there's a lot of rebuttals, you know, that can pop up in one's head about all these things, and a lot to get through.
So the one line that really blew me away from our conversation today is, and I think it's a place I'd like to leave people, because we were trying to find, like, what's a first step, because, you know, we dove into the depths of sort of spirituality and metaphysics and trying to bring it to people's lives. The one line that really sent chills down my spine is that we turn our self-criticism on others because we really don't believe it.
Yes.
And we think, you know, like, of course, like, if I truly believed that I was completely worthless and there was nothing of eternity or divinity in me, then it would make sense to blame everybody else. You know, or it would make sense to blame myself. But since I can't really believe that, there's some part of me that knows that that's a falsehood. That's the reason I projected outward.
That's right. And it's also too much of a burden to think it's our fault and, you know, we're to blame. I mean, we don't believe it, and we also can't really take that on, because that would hurt too much. And that's probably the first level. The second level is that we don't believe it at our core, because it's just not true, you know. So our most intuitive, deepest self knows that that's not true.
Right. So, and you know, the teacher in me wants to now give everyone assignments and a syllabus, and, you know, I recognize my desire for control, but I think what I heard from you is just learn how to quiet those thoughts through meditation, through simply understanding that the you that is observing everything is not the same as the mind that's producing all these thoughts.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's very good. That's, if we could find that place anytime we wanted, it would just, it'd be like, you know, we could go back there and then just spread that wider and wider, that place, have it kind of take over. So, you know, if we were talking to somebody who hasn't, I think everybody's probably had that experience at some point, to sort of step out of their life, and it's a very peaceful, happy place. Step out of their everyday mind. So to reach for that and to find it, it might be first thing in the morning, it might be last thing at night, it might be in the, just anywhere. It's going to be different for everybody. You know, where I have found it is when I was having trouble sleeping. There was some insomnia going on for a couple nights. I don't know, it was too hot in the bedroom or something. And I was laying there and just my mind was worrying and taking over with all these thoughts that I couldn't seem to control. And it was very unpleasant. And so I eventually went back to sleep. But the next night when I woke up, I was like, oh, same. It was kind of the same time. And I said, oh, I don't want to do that. I'm just going to really be calm and follow my breath. Just, that's all I'm going to do is listen, just feel my breath, feel my chest rise and fall, and listen to the quiet. And I went to this, such a quiet place there that I wasn't anxious about not sleeping. And it was just this peaceful place. I wasn't worried about not being asleep and getting the rest I needed. It was just such a quiet place. And I just felt just this presence of, I don't know. So that's the place I'm talking about getting to. You know, this really quiet place that is just peaceful, and understanding that there's no hurry, there's no fear. It's just this loving embrace that if we just still ourselves and get off that anxiety trip that we're always on, we can start living in that place. And I don't know, it just, we learn a lot from being in that place, and we want more and more of it, and then we start acting from that place, and our everything changes.
Right. So let's leave it there for now. We've given people a whole new landscape, you know, a whole new map for the same territory, and a first step. And
right.
So I expect people will listen to parts of this and nod their heads and agree. And there's parts of it people will listen to and argue with, and maybe even be upset by and offended by. And we're not asking anyone to believe, but to experience and see what is true that doesn't need to be proven or confirmed externally.
That's it. That experience of that internal core of who we are, and that connects to everything, or that is everything, and we're just, you know, connected with that seamlessly.
All right. Well, Mark, I want to thank you. I think it's a different interview than I often do, and that people come on with sort of a story and an agenda, and this has been an exploration. And I think we're both kind of figuring out how to articulate it, how to dance around the concepts that don't fit naturally into our Western language, and how to bridge the gap for folks who are frankly mostly, you know, largely where I am. Right, where I'm just trying to explore this territory, but I've been mentored by you and others, and I've seen enough to want to take this journey. So I want to thank you for being my guide in particular, and for your generosity in taking this time to share with my audience.
Well, this is all right back at you, Howard. I get as much from this as you do. From you. And you're right, this isn't something that's in a package. We're discovering this together. We're moving into this together and exploring. That's where the fun is for me. It's not kind of like, you know, coming to things that we can hang on to. As, you know, we can hang on to all of them, but they all change too. So we're moving forward, and we're going, and I just have to say, I think there are a lot of people on this journey with us that don't have the radio waves or the television attention, so it's really cool that you have some of that. You know, we're just used to the sound bites and the witty the witticisms that don't rock the boat too much and don't challenge what the beliefs are of our culture too much. But.
Right. It's funny you mentioned sound bites, because I'm in the middle of a book called The Surrender Experiment by Mickey Singer, and he quotes one of his spiritual teachers say, "Every day, bite off more than you can chew and chew it."
Yeah. I love it.
So
that's what I do with my journal. I mean, even if I can't write these ideas clearly, I just write them and just keep moving forward, keep going at it.
Right.
Well, thank you, Howard.
Thank you.
Fun.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
All right. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes at plantyourself.com/173. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 172 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com, where you can also sign up for the weekly email newsletter. Thanks to Plant Yourself Podcast patrons Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Morrow, Elizabeth Clifton, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Sharp, Tina Ahern, Jen Vilkinovsky, David Bizek, the mysterious Michelle X, Elsbeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, and Michelle Holt for your generous support of the podcast. If you would like to support the show, you can share this and other episodes on social media and via an email. You can write a review on iTunes. And I got two new reviews I want to read to you. One of them is by Depo Eddie on September 17th. It says, one of my favorites. Howard does a fantastic job of interviewing, one of the best. He pays attention to his guests and asks thoughtful questions. Too many out there just like to hear themselves talk. You can tell that he plays off what the guests actually say, not just of a list of pre-planned questions. He also has a variation of guest types, not just the standard plant-based foodies. Thanks, Howard. I look forward to each episode. Thank you so much, Depo Eddie. And one of the best vegan podcasts says, who I think I remember you from typing class. GJHHFJGHHTT. That was on September 14th. And this person says, this is probably my favorite plant-based podcast of them all. I really like the casual format. It's like hearing two friends talking. He has such inspiring guests on, from popular and famous scientists to the unaverage Joe. Highly recommend. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And if you would like to leave a review and make your name maybe a little bit easier to pronounce than those two, that would be awesome. Another thing I'm going to be experimenting with over the next few weeks is I have so many podcasts in the can and so many more scheduled that I am going to go to a twice a week schedule. So it's going to be, I think, Tuesdays and Fridays for a while. See how that goes. See how it feels. See what that does for my peace of mind and happiness and joy. And I'd like to hear from you guys as well, whether twice a week is better or worse, or you couldn't care less. Actually, if you couldn't care less, you don't have to let me know that. Just better or worse. So in garden news, we've had like 2.5 days of rain, which has been amazing. Like, you go outside and you see the plants like doing what they should be doing, like growing rapidly, just turning the right color, the leaves turning the right color of green. It's just amazing to realize, you know. So we've been watering and watering and watering through this droughty fall, late summer. Today's the first day of fall. And, you know, to see what happens when everything just works is a beautiful and humbling thing. So that's it for this week. As always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitude. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Sabali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.